and you're listening to Wines with Wilson, the podcast about all things wine. I'm Carlene Wilson. I run a small business called Cult Wine and another one called Wilson Your Wine Butler. And this podcast is all about our favourite beverage, wine. So, in our first episode, we had a look at ancient wines, at where wine came from and where it might be going to. Today, what we're going to have a look at is one of the countries which is kind of synonymous with wine. It's the place that I think I always used to think of as being the home of wine in the ancient world. And that, of course, is the beautiful country of Greece. So, we're taking a little trip to the Mediterranean in order to think a little bit about what wine was like in classical Greece. So, to give you a little bit of a context for time, what we're talking about is 500 to 400 BCE, approximately. And we're going to talk about some times outside of that as well. We're going to talk about the much more ancient times of the Bronze Age, of the Mycenaean and the Minoan periods. But the focus of what we're thinking about today is 500 BCE to 400 BCE. So a time about 2,500 years ago. And we're going to be thinking about the city-state of Athens, which takes exactly the same place in Attica on the coast of mainland Greece as the modern city of Athens. Now, when we think about Athens, hopefully one of the things that comes to mind is the home of democracy, the home of the idea that every citizen should have a role to play in the running of their city. And that's the thing that probably made Athens important, famous in the ancient world. So, unlike all the other city-states of Greece, Athens operated as a democracy. Each of its citizens had a role, a voice, a vote in the way that their city proceeded. Now, it all sounds very nice, doesn't it, until we remember that citizens were only men, were only people whose parents had also been citizens, and at various times in Athenian history were also only people who had plenty of money or property. So when we think of modern democracy, it's not really the same as the kind of democracy that was existing in ancient Athens. Now at this point you're wanting to say to me, Wilson, what on earth has this got to do with wine? Okay, what I want to do is I want to take you to the household of a young Athenian family. And the very first child in that household was born about 5 years ago from this day. Today is that child's fifth birthday, and they're being presented with a very important present. It's a small present. It's about the size of a modern teacup, maybe slightly smaller. It's called a chuos. It looks like a little jug. There's hundreds of these little jugs in the archaeological record. And these little jugs are always decorated with a beautiful picture of a small child, usually of a baby, playing with some sort of toy. The one that we're going to imagine is a little child crawling across the floor, done in white on a black background on the side of this little jug. Now, why has this five-year-old child been given this little jug? Well, in ancient Athens, child mortality was, as you can probably imagine, and as it remains in parts of the world where there's not adequate sanitation or medical access, child mortality was extremely high. But if you reached 5 years old, the chances were that you were going to reach adulthood, that you were going to reach the point when you could become a full citizen of Athens. Because, of course, there were also age restrictions on Athenian citizenship, similar to the way that there are age restrictions on voting today. So our five-year-old child in our imagined Athenian household has just received its chuos, its little jug, with a picture of a baby on the side of it. Now, what was that jug supposed to contain? I think you probably already know the answer. The chouas was a gift of the first little wine jug. The first little jug giving the first drink of wine mixed, I think we can assume, with a lot of water. The first drink of wine for that child who was now going to take their role, their part, as a future citizen of the city. The giving of a wine jug, the giving of the gift of the first drink of wine, was a way of acknowledging the child as a future citizen. Drinking wine and having the ability to drink wine is therefore, what that's telling us is that it's an essential part of being a citizen in ancient Rome, ancient Greece. And I think that that is a really important thing for us to understand, that wine is not just an intoxicant in this society, it's an indicator of your position as a citizen. Okay, being a citizen though involves a little bit more than just drinking wine, though, you know, that wouldn't have been a bad thing. Being a citizen also involves one of the key conflicts. So this brings us to one of the central dichotomies in Athenian society. And it's a dichotomy which they choose to express in the form of two of their key gods. So the first god we're going to look at is the god that doesn't have anything to do with wine, or at least only very peripherally. And that's the god Apollo. Apollo is associated with music, with logic, with reason. Apollo, in some ways, is the god of the city, of civil and urbanized, civilized life. Apollo's also the god of Delphi, the incredible temple where the prophetess would tell you your future. So above the temple at Delphi are two very important ways of being. One says, know thyself. Know thyself. Know who you are. Understand the person that you are. Be self-aware. The other thing written above the temple in Delphi that is the thing that Apollo wants people to do is moderation in everything. Moderation in all things. Be moderate. And it's not suggesting that you should try everything, though that's implied. What's suggesting is that everything you do try and everything you do do, you should do in moderation. Moderation, being moderate, thinking things through, being logical, are key elements of what it is to be an Athenian citizen. Okay, you're saying, what has this got to do with wine? Let's get to the wine, Wilson. Well, we are just about to get to the wine, because the other god that we need to think about, the other god who's the other half of this dichotomy, is Dionysus, sometimes called Bacchus in its Roman form. So Dionysus is a very ancient god. He's a god that doesn't necessarily have an immediate connection to Greece. The Greeks thought of him as having come from the east, as having come from Lydia. And Dionysus also represents theatre. He's the god of theatre. The Theatre of Dionysus was one of the key civic buildings in ancient Athens. Dionysus is the god of madness, of craziness, of behaving other than you are. He's also the god of mimicry, of not being what you appear. And possibly most importantly, Dionysus is the god of wine, and of all of the festivals and celebrations and all of the good things that are associated with wine. Because he's the god of wine, he's shown in two different forms. Sometimes he's shown as a beautiful young man in the way that the new vines in the field grow up, the new fresh leaves, the new grapes. But he's also often shown as an old man, craggy, wrinkled, in just in the same way that at the end of the season, the vines have grown out. There is now more wood. It's old. It's crinkled wood. So Dionysus himself, in the forms that he takes and the forms that he was imagined as being, is exactly like the grapevine. So Dionysus, obviously against Apollo's reason and civilization, Dionysus, on the other hand, represents that side of our humanity which is wild, which is natural, which tends towards chaos. And for the ancient Greeks, this was given names. So Apollo's the god of nomos, the god of logic, the god of the city, the god of civilization, whereas Dionysus is the god of physis, the god of nature, the god of chaos, the god of everything that's wild. So what we have in the dichotomy is we have a separation between reason and nature. And Dionysus, for those ancient Greeks, represents that wild, natural side of us that in some ways I suppose we all kind of want to be able to celebrate. But, as I was saying, the citizen needs to be moderate. And for a city to function, for something, for a civilization, for an urban centre to function, citizens have to behave with some sort of moderation. How do you balance out the love of Dionysus, and in fact the worship of Dionysus, which was done through wild drinking parties and drumming and running through the woods outside of the city, how do you balance that with this idea that you need to actually be rational, logical, and practice some moderation? This is the real challenge for the Athenians, and it's a challenge when it comes to the way that they want to enjoy wine. Because Athenians did enjoy wine, and they enjoyed it in very large quantities at times. And if the number of amphora that we find in the archaeological record has anything to go by, they enjoyed it in significant quantities. The place where wine was most commonly enjoyed in a sort of semi-public way is in what's called the symposia. So when we think about a modern symposium, we think about academics gathered together for a discussion of their academic field, and we think of something that's quite serious and something where people are focused on their professional lives. A symposia in ancient Athens was a drinking party. Now, I've been to a few academic conferences that probably felt a bit like drinking parties, but let's move on for that. So the symposia is a drinking party. It's a drinking party where only men were invited. Women in Athens had an important role within the household. Their role was to look after that household, to do the weaving for it, which sounds like a small job, but actually when you consider that all cloth had to be produced by hand by the people who were weaving it upstairs in these households, then it was a significant job. So women's role was very much within the domestic unit. Men's role was out in public, being the citizens. And that division of labour went all the way through to socialising, where men tended to socialise together and in these drinking parties, these symposia. The only women who would have been invited to these drinking parties were dancing girls and courtesans, and also lots of dancing boys and probably a whole range of male courtesans as well. So these were fairly wild affairs to begin with. These are parties which are aimed at having a good time, at having a celebration, and where wine was an important part of that. At the beginning of any Athenian symposia, wine party, the host would make a decision, often in consultation with the most important guest at the party, about exactly what amount of wine and water were going to be mixed. Wait, you say? They mixed their drinks? Yes, indeed. If you want to be like an ancient Athenian, you need to mix your wine with water. In fact, from the archaeological record, it becomes quite clear to us that they didn't just mix their wine with water. They sometimes mixed it with seawater. Delicious, salty wine, just what we want. Sometimes with other herbs and spices, often with honey. Now, what we don't know for certain is whether or not this was because the wine tasted so bad that having to add seawater was actually an improvement, or whether it really was just a matter of taste. Don't go out and mix seawater with your wine, folks. I just really don't recommend it. So, wine is always mixed with something, and usually with water, before it's consumed at one of these parties. It was actually considered quite gauche, quite uncultured, to drink one's wine without mixing it. Mixing takes place in a great big pottery vessel called a crater. Now, a crater is kind of what it sounds like, except it's spelt with a K rather than a C. It's a very large pot, a little bit like maybe one of those large pots you see beside mansions with palm trees growing in them, something of about that size. Something that's at least a meter high often and wide, and in which you're going to pour the wine using another jug, which is probably made of very fine pottery, and you're going to mix it with a certain amount of water, maybe one part to one part, one part to two parts, all depending on how intoxicated you want your guests to get and how quickly. So, where does this take us in terms of the idea of moderation? Well, it seems that the ancient Athenians really did have an idea that maybe one or two glasses or craters was okay, but that beyond that, things were going to get a little bit out of control. I want to read to you a fragment from a play by Eubulus. Eubulus was an Athenian poet, a comedic poet, and we don't actually have very many of his plays. In fact, we don't have any of his plays in extant form. We don't have a full play, but we have these little fragments that give us a picture of what his plays would have been like. And he was writing in the 4th century BCE, so a little bit outside of the classical time that we're talking about. And in his play, there is the character of Dionysus, and this character discusses with some of the other characters in the play about how he would prepare for one of these symposia. And he says, "I mix 3 craters, only for those who are wise. One is for good health, which they drink first. The second is for love and pleasure. The third is for sleep. And when they have drunk it, those who are wise wander homewards. The fourth is no longer ours, but belongs to hubris. The fifth leads to shouting." I think we've all been there. "The sixth to drunken revel. The seventh to black eyes. The eighth to illegal summons. The ninth to bile. The tenth to madness." And that it makes people throw things. I think we may have all been to one of those parties in our time as well. I think it's a lovely way of looking at what moderation actually meant for those ancient Athenians. And the understanding that first drink is for good health, that second one is for pleasure and maybe makes you think of love, that third one, most of us who are wise are getting ready for a little bit of sleep after the third drink. From then on in, it's anybody's game. And I do like the idea that the 10th, my goodness, by the 10th, that it's going to lead to madness and make people throw things. There is actually a rather lovely drinking cup that I've seen in a museum that has a picture of a man, a beardy man, who's not wearing very many clothes and is appearing to be throwing a piece of furniture. I think he possibly was a character from this play that Eubulus is imagining. I think what this tells us is that these ancient Greeks had a very good idea about their own nature and about human nature, because what it's telling us is that they knew very well that it was quite easy to get excessive about wine, you know, the beverage that we all love so much. I want to talk a little bit more about some of those consequences of immoderation. And I know that in some ways it's quite a long way from wine, but I think it actually comes to the heart of the ancient Athenians and the place that wine played for them in their conception of themselves, in their feelings about the rest of the world, and about their understandings of what it was to be a citizen. And I think what I'm trying to get to in this discussion, in this episode, is that for these people in ancient Athens, just as for many other peoples today, wine is not just something which is part of a celebration. It's not just a drink which is there to enjoy with our Tuesday night dinner. That wine actually has an incredibly important role to play in our whole conception of ourselves as peoples and as cultures, at least within the wine drinking and wine producing cultures of the world. So, a little bit more on immoderation and its consequences. One of the things that the Athenians liked to do was to make these particularly beautiful drinking cups. They're called kylix, and they were not the only kind of cup that you could drink wine out of. In fact, there's a whole lot of different vessels. Some of them look really just literally like teacups, like a nice big mug of wine mixed with water, maybe seawater, something that we could all enjoy, I'm sure. So some of them look just like mugs. There are very fancy drinking vessels called rhyton, which are often in the shape of heads, the heads of animals or the heads of people. And they're particularly amusing because they have pointed ends, so you can't actually put the cup down unless it's empty, something which kind of cuts across the whole argument about moderation that I seem to be making. The kylix, though, is a very specific sort of drinking vessel. Now, for a kylix, what you've got to imagine is something about the size of a dinner plate with a handle on either side that would have had a little bit of depth in it. So kind of imagine one of those trendy modern dinner plates that's sort of about 3 or 4 centimetres deep. So it's enough, it's convex or concave, depending on which way you're looking at it, and it's able to contain the wine. Now, down the bottom of these vessels, there was always a painting. There's always a picture in the centre of the vessel. And as you drank the wine, a little bit like those kind of cheeky cups where, you know, the lady undresses herself as you drink the beer. Maybe I'm a child of the 70s and so I remember these things. These cups, as you drink from them, as you drink from your kylix, the wine disappears and the picture at the bottom of the cup becomes more and more obvious. And these pictures were often jokes. So sometimes they were quite grubby jokes. Down the bottom of the cup there would be a picture of a courtesan sitting on a couch or some other sort of ribald scene. But quite often the picture at the bottom of the cup was a warning. And there are numerous cups that show a gentleman who has clearly had a little bit too much to drink, who's had one too many craters, who's maybe at the bile stage that Eubulus talked about. And the Athenian painters seem to take great delight in showing pictures basically of men throwing up. Always with them is a companion, often a lovely young woman who's holding their head for them, holding their curls out of the stream, just as, you know, some of us may remember our friends holding our hair aside when we'd had a little bit too much on an occasion as youths. So these kind of jokes in the middle of these drinking cups, these reminders to the drinkers at the symposia, these reminders to the revelers that one or two craters is okay, but by the time you're hitting your fourth or fifth, you really are risking making a little bit of a fool of yourself. And I really like the idea that the ancient Athenians were sitting around at these parties, drinking from these cups, knowing that down the bottom of the cup there was going to be a joke to remind them about their humanity. Because although they are a joke, they're also a reminder to us of our common and our shared humanity. And probably more importantly for the Athenians, they're a reminder of our role as citizens and our responsibility as citizens. And part of our responsibility is to celebrate Dionysus and celebrate the joys and the pleasures that those first few craters can mean. But another really important part of our responsibility is to remember that we have to be moderate if we're actually going to be good citizens. So that's a little bit of a journey into ancient Athens, into ancient Greece, a little bit of a journey into the place that wine played in that ancient society. In our next episode, we're going to take a closer look at some of the modern Greek grapes and some of the modern Greek wines that have some connection back to those ancient beverages, mixed with seawater or not, that the ancient Athenians might have been drinking. So stay tuned for our next episode of Wines with Wilson. Thanks for listening.